Welcome to the 10K Collective podcast for 6, 7 and 8 figure Amazon and e-commerce sellers, a part of the amazing FBA family. If you want to scale fast, target a 7 figure exit and enjoy the process, then keep listening. Today's episode is sponsored by the new e-commerce podcast, The E-commerce Leader, co-hosted by myself, Michael Veazey, and Jason Miles, top 1% Shopify store owner and Udemy's highest rated e-commerce instructor. If you're the owner of a thriving e-commerce business, look for The E-commerce Leader on your favorite podcast app and subscribe today. As an e-commerce merchant, you know just how important easy and secure payments are. With today's sponsor, Payoneer, you can get paid by a variety of marketplaces in multiple foreign currencies, just as if you had a local bank account. You can also pay your suppliers and VAT directly from your earnings. Receiving and making international payments has never been so simple. And with the Payoneer mobile app, it's even easier. Do your online store or business a favor and register today at payoneer.com/amazingFBA. Ladles and jelly spoons, boys and girls, welcome to the 10K Collective. This is a place for 6, 7 and 8 figure Amazon sellers. Now, today's conversation is going to be very interesting. It's with John Cavendish of Seller Candy. Now, Seller Candy's pitch is that they are your Amazon Seller Central personal assistant, and very valuable it is too. But today's a bit more meta than that, because this isn't just for Amazon sellers so much as people who are Amazon sellers and have, of course, developed a huge amount of skill sets and experience over that time and are potentially wanting to monetize that by, well, an agency or indeed any other ways. So, John, welcome back to the show. This is going to be an interesting discussion.
Oh, yeah, thanks for having me back.
Thank you. And we're talking about monetizing your Amazon skill set other than, I guess, just selling e-commerce-based products. Yeah. So, obviously, something you've got a lot of experience now. You started your agency a while ago. Tell us a bit about that journey. What even got you to the point where you wanted to start an agency? Why bother? Why not just keep selling products forever?
That's a good question. And I don't think we ever talked about this. So this was actually something my friend was telling me for a while. He was like, "Oh, you start an agency?" And I was like, "No, I don't want to start an agency. Seems like a lot of stress, a lot of hassle." And then I went to a Tony Robbins event. And the whole thing of Tony Robbins was figuring out what you want to do and how to impact more people. And one thing he said, because this wasn't the business event that I went to at the time, was that you make more money, you make more income through impacting more people. And I was thinking, oh, that sounds good. Actually, with an Amazon agency, I could do that. I could impact more people through the customers, but also through the agency, through the business owners we're working with and the brand owners. So that's when I kind of came up with the idea. Actually, in Australia, at this Tony Robbins event with my friend, we came up with the name for my original agency, which was Ecom DNA. And then from there, we kind of launched basically after this Tony Robbins event. I think we actually closed our first client during the time still in Australia, just because we happened to have a lead at that time. So it was, yeah, pretty fun experience. And that's how I got into it. Because before that, I was kind of sick of the Amazon space. I've been doing it for a few years and I didn't feel like I was adding value. Like with the products that I was selling at the time, they weren't particularly special. They were kind of just private label products, which I'd started out back in 2014.
That's so interesting. I love that. And by the way, congratulations on being a massive action taker. That reminds me of, what was he? I guess it's sales and marketing coach for NLP people, a lot of life coaches and stuff. And he was obviously, with NLP, it's kind of obvious that he was massively into Tony Robbins, who's one of the biggest sort of publicizers of NLP, and John Grinder's work, specifically Grinder. So like you, he had a habit of going to these sort of webinars or seminars, or in this case, a big sort of event. And then in the hotel room in the evening after the event, actually getting the hell on with creating a business. So you're after his kind of style. I really, really like the fact that you got the hell on with closing your first client when you were there. And we were talking about this before this conversation where we're having sort of, it's a conversation that doesn't tend to be out there so much in the podcast sphere that I've come across, which is people who are running Amazon-based agencies talking about that business. And like you, I can also relate to the feeling that I didn't feel great about the value I was adding with private label products on Amazon. And equally, the impact I can see, for example, running the masterminds for me is my sort of big thing that gradually emerged out of my own needs, actually. It wasn't a big aha moment like you had. But the fact that I can see the impact I'm having on people's lives is something in a way that I care about. I don't particularly care about sending people a beautiful product. And some people really do, I think, and that's really good. I love the fact that I could see, like somebody said, for example, this is a simple one. One of the mastermind members, Tim, he said, yeah, he got to $1 million run rate about a year ago. And he said, like, honestly, I don't think I could have done it without you guys. I'm like, oh, please say that again on camera. That's the perfect testimonial. But it wasn't public. It wasn't for any other reason other than he meant it. And for me, that was like, yes, that's it. That gives me a great feeling to help other people develop a business, which is what I want to be. In other words, I'm serving my own kind of peeps. So that's amazing. So tell me about, obviously, you closed your first client, but that is obviously one client does not make an agency. So how did you go from there? What was next?
So I say that I closed our first client during the time in Australia. That's just because I happened to have an introduction at the time. Like I happened to have this lead. Like then it was a kind of 18 months of, well, a year to 18 months of pain of me figuring out how sales worked, for agency sales worked. So I made all the classic mistakes, like charging too little per month, doing revenue share without a big enough retainer to make it worthwhile while you're scaling up to start the agency, because you need cash flow to start an agency, doing month-by-month agreements. People could cancel anytime. They usually didn't, but it means they can. And I didn't think people would sign a 3, 6-month, 12-month agreement. And these days, all our agreements are 12 months. And then not concentrating on sales. Because being an Amazon seller before, I thought you do a good job and they will come, which does work in a very, very long term, but you have to survive that long and you have to build a team. So agency is a sales driven business. So sales is the lifeblood of an agency. So actually the better I got, the more I realized that I was super into the sales part of it. I got really excited about it, figuring out how things worked, getting our sales process better, getting a coach, like making this a really, really fast-paced growing business. But the delivery side was like not really where I was at. So I actually partnered with other people for delivery as we grew bigger and bigger and bigger.
There's so many lessons to unpack here. I mean, first of all, I've got to say that I'm like the kind of crash test dummy for many things that I get wrong that I then report back to people on the podcast or indeed my clients and say like, okay, I've tried this way. Don't do this. It doesn't work. Charging too little month by month agreements, revenue share from tiny money and not doing enough on sales. That is basically me. So I think I'm an example of the before picture. And interesting that, so it sounds like you had a journey, if I'm right. So you started off being obviously very good at the operations side of Amazon, having done it for yourself for years, right? And then it sounds like the first pain was becoming, you know, aware that you had to become good at sales.
Yeah.
And then weirdly enough, it sounds like you had another pain where you got good at sales and you realized you were no longer really into operations. Is that right? Have I understood that journey?
Yes. Yeah, so we still have our own agency and we still actively take on clients and we do an amazing job. But I was growing the sales faster than I wanted to grow the operations team, which I guess is a good place to be in. Like money was coming in. But because we were in the complete opposite of that cycle for the first 12 to 18 months. But because I was trying to build and train this team, I wasn't spending any time on sales. So I didn't sort out the process. I didn't realize, like I was so deep into it, I didn't realize the whole problem was sales. But it turns out the whole problem is sales. Like if more money's coming in, you can always solve the problem. You can find somebody.
I think that's a really very sobering and very comforting statement as well. If more money's coming in, you can solve the problem. I like that's a tweetable right there. But I think also this comes down to one of the things that we all think, it's a bit like you alluded to in our episode about for Seller Candy, so getting people to come to the webinar about Seller Candy who are Amazon operators, that we all think we're special and that our problems are unique, but actually they're not. They're this the same old for you guys. So if you do Amazon sort of operation specialism as you guys do, then in the end, you see the same damn problem 50 million times from different clients, right? And I guess the same is true for anything else. So in other words, if you have a problem that is solvable by a human, there's probably a bunch of people out there who've already developed the skill set because there's a market for it. And if you've got enough money, you can attract them and hire them, I guess, right? So it's interesting that running a business requires, especially entrepreneurship, requires a lot of cojones. I'm trying to avoid saying rude words on my own podcast and courage. But also it can really lead to a delusion that we're special. And the humility is like, I'm not special. I just kind of got this big idea, but actually the rest of it could be sold to somebody else or, you know,
exactly.
Hired.
And that's the same thing with when you're doing Amazon consulting as well. Mm-hmm. Like everyone wants to feel unique and everyone should feel unique whose business, who's coming to you to sell to. Mm-hmm. But in reality, everyone has the same problem, which is they want to increase their Amazon sales. They want to understand what the upside is. They want to understand the opportunity. So you can take them all through the exact same sales process.
Yeah.
And you take them through discovery, figuring out what they need. You take them through the pitch. And the pitch is going to be 90% the same for everyone, and then just tailored slightly to them. So that's how you really scale sales and be able to do it on your own or with a very small team, is by having everything prepared, having a system, and then just taking them through the system. Because, and then once you get better and better operating the system, I know someone's going to close on the discovery call most of the time. Like if the pricing's right, if you really get to the bottom of what their problems are and you understand their problems, then they're going to work with you.
Wow.
And our close rate has been great for that. Like it's really hit its stride in the last few months, to be honest. Like last month was an incredible sales month, biggest sales month of my life.
Wow. So much to take in here. I mean, I think it's weird. You're sort of, how can I put this, weirdly confident. And of course you're confident because you've had a lot of success with this, but it's extraordinary how confident you are in your sales system now. So I guess my question is, how do you get to that point? Because you talked about the pain of the beginning. So it sounds like the first pain was not knowing how to sell, or not even realizing that you didn't know how to sell, or that not realizing how basically important it was. Maybe that's the thing. Mm. So how did you go from that place to now I'm super confident in your sales system and it's really working for you?
Mm. So, I mean, thanks for saying that, because I definitely was not confident in it when we started, because I remember my first sales call ever. I apologized to the guy, middle of the call, very English, saying something like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm not very good at this. Yeah. Or something like that. Anyway, obviously I didn't get that sale.
Quintessentially English thing to say, and I can relate to that. I think it's weird, isn't it, that Americans are just much more, what's the word, shameless, is sounds a judgmental word, but they don't have shame around selling. And I think that's really helpful, actually, because to be honest, it is a burden. If you're talking to somebody and they're apologizing for themselves, and they're kind of, I guess, the without getting too into the weeds of psychology, the unconscious transaction that's happening is not please buy my stuff. It's like, please make me feel better about being crap. Mm. And actually, they might even do that, but then the transaction is different from, I'm really confident and strong, and I can give you the confidence that you want. And you know what? It strikes me that a lot of selling really is, on the surface of it, about money and operations and pitching and, you know, the superficial stuff. But really, I think it's a transfer of feelings a lot of ways. Tell me about energy. Your view of it.
Woo-woo style. Like,
yeah.
I think I kind of think once you've done a lot of sales calls, you can feel if like the energy is right on the call, or if the pace is right, your pacing's right, their reactions to what you're saying is right. If everything's right, everyone's nodding along, it's like, all right, that's good. Everything's going good. Keep moving forward, keep asking the right questions. So your question was about the process from getting from where we started to where I am now.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of examples of things going well. Trying things, they didn't work. But one of the big changes for me when I got a coach over a year ago, a year and a half ago, was like, I didn't, before, I was never so 100% dedicated to the call. And be able to say, you have to be able to say on the call, like, we are the best person for you to work with. And even if we have a problem, we will go the extra mile to solve this problem for you. And like deliver it straight and straight to the point and build a relationship with this person, and you're the person to trust. And it's, I mean, that's why I'm confident about it, because I have to be confident about it. If you're not confident about it, you're not going to sell nothing.
I remember, again, this NLP-based coach who was very good at sales. And he said that you basically have to be super confident. And I think he said something else, and I'd be interested to take your view on this. He said, look, there are two views of the world at the table there regarding the specific issue, not the entire planet or politics or anything, but the issue at hand, yours and the person on the other side of the table. And he said the one with the stronger conviction will prevail. I mean, what are your thoughts about it? It sounds almost adversarial, and I don't think I mean it that way, because obviously you're trying to help your client, genuinely trying to help the client. Of course, anyone who runs a service business wants to help, I think, unless they're really totally money-driven. I mean, I think most people I speak to in the podcast, genuinely off-air, actually are really helpful people, yourself very much included. But how does that interaction work for you? What I'm trying to say is, what's your view of the role of confidence in the interaction with the client in terms of selling? I mean, obviously confidence makes you sell, but how does the interaction, how does the dynamics of the interaction work at the sort of visceral level? Is it really about you having more conviction? Is it about seducing them? Is it about overcoming the objections?
I wouldn't say that I'm the best salesman out there. I mean, my close rate's really good these days. Like last month, over 50, maybe it's over 60%, I think, of the pitches I did. And that's, you know, pretty good for Amazon consulting. But it's about having a great offer. And like, so going back to the start of it, of what you asked, like firstly, understanding everything. Like you need to understand absolutely everything about their business. And I don't want them to ever in the discovery process think, oh, I'm not going to buy from that guy because he didn't ask this question. So actually one of my golden nuggets, which I would say ask on every single sales call, it's a question you asked me already in the last podcast episode, which is there anything else that I should be asking you about your business? And then just if they say anything, keep asking that question. One time I asked it like 10 times. But if they get to the point where it's like, no, I think you know everything, then you know everything. There's no like going to be no niggle in the back of their head. Like, oh, he didn't ask this. There's no way that he can pitch me, or there's no way he knows my business because he didn't ask this question. And then once you get to the presentation, after that, the first part of the presentation is again going through the same thing. These are the three goals that we discussed on the last call. Are these your goals? Is there anything you'd want to ask? Is there anything that isn't included here? Because if you're super clear that this is what they want to achieve, you understand their business, these are their goals, then it's just telling them about your process and how it works, how much the price is, and then they should go ahead. As long as it's just all about clarity. And I think now with Amazon, we've done it so many times that we have very, very good clarity. And actually had a prospect yesterday say, no, that's very clear.
That's very interesting. I guess it's not ultimately, I mean, I guess confidence is also a precondition for being able to come across as, reassuring anything in the prospect's mind that is somehow a resistance or a worry. But the rest of it sounds like just being very, very, very thorough about understanding where they're coming from and understanding where they want to go to. And I guess then you just plug your solution in as the path from where they are to where they want to be, right? It sounds like.
Yeah, exactly. We take you from where you want out to where you want to be. That's our like number one phrase.
Yeah.
So it's about just getting clarity, and the process can give clarity. Like it seems now like I'm diving into all these things, but if you have a defined process and it's tailored for your business, then it's going to be the same for almost every client you bring through. You can also, it means that you can filter them quite easily for who's going to be a good client and who's not. You don't need to like talk to absolutely everyone. I mean, I like talking to people, so I will talk to people who I know aren't going to be qualified and say, I'll make you a little Doom video of what the opportunities are in the future. And then sometimes they go like, oh, we want to work together. Hmm. But it's not, I know that they're not making enough revenue really to justify our service.
I guess that's another thing that I'm sort of backing off from the sales call itself to who you're attracting into your, so the marketing piece that goes around that is who you're attracting and what you're offering. And it sounds like you've got a fairly specific client type that you know you can help, and also people that aren't a fit. So how do you go about sort of defining that side, the client type, first of all?
So, I mean, we're like, just like everybody else, we're always getting better at this stuff. So to be honest, we just target brands of a certain size for our outreach. We cast a wide net. We see what comes back. So we could have a whole other episode on lead gen and direct outreach and all that kind of thing, and a whole episode on every different type of direct outreach. We've had lots of success with LinkedIn. We've had some success with partnerships, webinars. We've tried a lot of different things. And actually, the next thing is paid traffic. Like, that's what I want to be testing in the next month, is we're going to start a paid traffic funnel, because I believe that a steady stream of leads is everything.
I guess once it's interesting to sort of look at the development of the process, because what interests me, so the entrepreneurship is not the same as running an existing business. I've got a relative who's a CEO of a big existing business. Such a different job from entrepreneurship. It's still, you could call it business from the outside perspective, but it has almost nothing. The skill set, I mean, he's a very bright guy. I'm sure he could be an entrepreneur, but different skill set. So what interests me is that, okay, you developed your skills before you started the business, from running your own Amazon business. Then you have the idea. Then I'm sort of tracking your journey here. And then, okay, then you're thrashing around going, how the heck do I scale this? And you realize, oh, I need to focus on sales. Then you get somebody who does the operations side, so you can focus on scales, they do operations. And then it's about getting a sales pitch that converts because the offer makes sense. And then it's about sort of outside, it seems like you're adding then the other piece, which is more traffic. And then the steady stream of leads is everything, as you were saying. But my guess is that's only so once you've got a clear offer, a clear client type, and a clear sales process, would you say that's accurate?
Yes. And I say it's everything. It's not actually absolutely everything. It depends on how fast you want to grow. It's everything if you want to grow aggressively and fast. If you just want to be adding minimum with an agency, you should be adding 2 clients a month, ideally, so that you're growing, not dying. If you can convert 50% of the qualified clients, 25 leads that come in, you only need 4 qualified leads to get to pitch per month. So actually that can be done just through Facebook, networking, relationships. That's not a huge number of leads. But like last month we converted 6 leads. And that means you're going to need more different avenues of leads coming in to start that. And like, say the average conversion is 4 or 5K a month. Like it very quickly adds up.
Interesting. And I guess then for people coming from the Amazon sort of world and that's mentality that we're programmed into, I guess, you make a sale, you make the money, and then you go out and look for the next sale, like sort of, I suppose, a scaled version of sort of hunter-gatherer mentality. And yeah, I guess if once you've got something...
That's going to drive you crazy doing that.
Exactly. But I mean, that's, yeah, and I've done that to a degree. But I guess what you were implying earlier is, okay, some of the classic errors are charging too little, month-by-month agreements.
Prospecting. So what you just said, that's another massive error. So if you start prospecting... And then you'll go, oh, I've got no sales. What happened? And it's because you stopped prospecting 2 months ago. So there's a cycle. Like once you start prospecting 2 months later, that's when the sales come through. So if you stop, you'll be like, oh, things are going fine. Oh, what happened? I stopped prospecting 2 months ago. Or I was distracted in delivery or something.
And again, in the end, what strikes me, and it what strikes me about my situation running a titchy little, so not really agency, but consultancy, I guess, and the masterminds are kind of group consulting. And it works really well, by the way. I mean, the one-to-one stuff that I do with people who are new to the space is really hard to scale. And I've made the absolute errors of doing a month-to-month agreement, and they tend to cancel in month three. And some people stick around for ages. And it's not normally because I've done a bad job. I think they just lose heart or they don't have enough money, which is about qualifying people better, I think. But just coming back to the opposite then. So the classic error is doing month to month. Tell me about how your thinking is. Obviously, the opposite is to do bigger agreements. How did you get to that point and how do you kind of make that work?
So there's two things there. The first one about the coaching. So I listened to a really interesting podcast a couple of days ago. If you don't mind me meta sharing a podcast within a podcast, which was about selling this type of coaching. And it was... basically, charge more money up front, as with everything else on a coaching agreement. If it's a 3 month program, charge the real value of it. Have an amazing kickoff call. And the kickoff call should basically, everyone gets the most value in a coaching program from the initial call. And then do not set follow-up calls. Give them a link to your Calendly to book into your calendar, and people will book in when they need help. And the high-performance people, who are the people you want to attract to the coaching, aren't going to want a weekly call. They want to check in, or they want to be able to message you when they have a problem. But actually setting the strategy at the start of it and you being the support person, that seemed like such a powerful structure to me for high performance coaching. And it also means that, you know, you charge based on the outcome. So 3 month program, they get access to your calendar. I mean, that shouldn't be less than $3,000 in the way I see it. I mean, you could charge 10 for it. You could charge 20 for it if you have the right prospect and the person that wants to achieve this result really quickly and is throwing around hundreds of thousands in potential inventory. Because at the end of the day, you're saving somebody a loss of potentially 50 grand, 100 grand if they do something wrong.
Absolutely. I mean, the nice thing about people in the Amazon space, if you're wanting to set up an Amazon selling agency specifically, is that because, as you say, they're throwing a lot of money around, the chances of them making a mistake that could cost them $100,000 are really pretty high. So it's not hard to add value by avoiding a $100,000 mistake, and they pay you $5,000 for that. That's incredible return on investment. It's a weird way of looking at it, but honestly, I think that's honestly a lot of the best value that we've given people. And that happens, anyone who's sold on Amazon for more than 5 minutes will know that the absolute truth of that, buying the wrong products, not getting inspection done, you know, whatever it is, Amazon account suspension, if you can deal with that, which is a specialist area, but that's worth hundreds of thousands of dollars of lost revenue.
Being faster. Yeah. Being faster, like working with you and them getting there within 3 months than within 9 months to a year. I mean, that's scaling time. And on top of that, scaling faster. So getting to the whatever everyone wants, seven-figure business, getting there in 2 years rather than getting there in 4 years, have to quit their job, all that kind of stuff, that's awesome.
And also, I think there's an external dynamic to that, which is that if you're not scaling fast and your competition is, then you're losing market share, which means effectively you lose the ability to do all the great things you can do if you really dominate a market. So set pricing, be the standard product against which other products are compared and so forth, right? There's even within the Amazon space, again, the beautiful thing about selling about an Amazon agency is that your clients really need to scale fast a lot of the time. They don't have the option of just kind of bumping along. So
Sorry, the other question that was about long agreements. So this was actually working with a coach. Working with a coach helped me on that. So from now on, you sell 12-month programs. All right. Then believing that it's possible. So believing it's possible, getting structure set up so you show the customer what they're going to be achieving in this 12-month program. And then taking payment upfront. If you're not taking payment upfront, if you're invoicing people after you've delivered a service. Like it's a recipe for crashing the business in terms of cash flow. So always getting paid up front for any work that gets done. Making it as simple as possible. I like credit card payments pretty good.
Yeah.
You can do invoicing if you really want to, but I think credit cards are pretty good.
Stripe's a pretty handy system, and I've found that Stripe, particularly for managing subscription type things, I'd do it via Cartrail or those various things. I'm not trying to sell people into the idea of a particular, you know, system, but very interesting. You know what? A lot of it strikes me is two things, which sound, it's so mindset based, and I'm always wary of that because it's like this simple sounding solution, and the reality is always harder in some ways. But it seems like two things, which is interesting that it grew out of a Tony Robbins event. I had no idea about that. But number one is making a decision that you're going to do a thing. Number two is it needs to be big enough and bold enough for it to be, have a sort of energy for you that I think the clients pick up on. Number three is a confidence, at all of which are kind of emotional level skills, aren't they, rather than competence. And it strikes me that, you know, the two go in tandem, but it's amazing what a big percentage of it is just still at the emotional level or the courage level. It kind of always surprises me when it comes down to that. I'm like, but surely it needs to be more complicated than that. If you're a very analytical person, I certainly find that my instinct is to try and be like a good A-level student. And I was an A-grade student at school. And before anyone thinks I'm boasting, I think that's a terrible thing as an entrepreneur, because it makes you very conscientious about stupid things that don't matter. And my instinct, if somebody gives me something to prove value, is to go very complicated and very detailed. And I think sometimes the opposite is like, I just need to be very bold. What are your thoughts on that? You're kind of an analytical guy. You're also British, which can be, as you said, a bit of a barrier to getting work done and selling.
Mindset 100%. Like, and I'm not saying that I maintain this mindset that I have right now throughout this journey. Like, for sure, I've had downtimes. And I think all of us who work for ourselves and push hard, lots of us anyway, are susceptible to these up and downs. But it's knowing how to handle ourselves in the downs and keep ourselves going and motivated, which I think leads to long-term success. Because long-term thinking and keeping plugging away and doing something and keeping excited about it, I think is super, super important.
Well, that also ties in with what you were saying about what you're selling. Because if you're going to sell a month-to-month service and people come in and come out, as I've found with the people that are on the sort of new side, you know, aren't established Amazon sellers at all, and then you also acknowledge your internal waves that go up and down depending on what's going on in the world and what's going on in your business and how physically tired you might be, there's a sort of short-term vacillation that seems built into that. Whereas if you're thinking over the next 12 months minimum with a client, then you can kind of mentally go, okay, well, I can have a bad week and that's actually not that significant as a percentage of a 12-month period, right? So that's very interesting. That feels to me like those tie together as well. So, John, there's some really, really fascinating stuff come from our conversations privately, and I hope that we're sharing some of our conversations here as in the form of a podcast has been of interest to people. I mean, lots of people out there that I personally know, so lots, I mean, it's handfuls of people in the wider world of Amazon, but I know a lot of serious Amazon sellers, and some of them are pretty curious about or actually very much on the route to running their own agency. So what would the main takeaways be for them that you would take from your experience of the last few years?
So basically having a sales process that you can follow every single time, getting long-term agreements in place, understanding who your ideal customer is, and understanding how you interact with them. So taking them all the way from cold lead to a sale as quickly as possible. And every time you do it, getting better, improving the processes, and actually following the same process. Too many times so this is actually a really big takeaway. In an agency, people think they have to do whatever the customer asks for, whatever the potential lead asks for. Whereas in reality, it should be figuring out how that lead fits into our box. So our service should get them to the result they want. And we should be showing them how what they want fits into what we offer, as opposed to tailoring everything uniquely to the customer, because that's what's going to drive you absolutely crazy as an agency owner. You should be selling roughly the same product, maybe a tiny bit of tweaking, but enough that any of your staff, once you have more team, can deliver this without having to have a huge brief on what the difference is between this and another customer.
Yeah.
To everybody. You shouldn't be tailoring it for everyone. I mean, you can do if you're charging a fortune, but if you're charging relatively low fees, like $5,000 to $10,000 a month, which is relatively low if you've got a team, then you need to be standardizing things as much as possible.
That's interesting. And by the way, everyone uses the metaphor of tailoring, but of course, tailoring is a real job. And I'm not somebody who's had custom-made suits made from, although my grandfather, I believe, used to have them made in German Street.
Or Vietnam.
Of course, they do that in Hong Kong as well, famously. But here's the point, though. Whilst it is custom-made to fit your body exactly compared to an off-the-peg suit, nevertheless, they start with patterns and standardized ways of doing things and then tweak those. So even tailored starts from standard. And I think that's a really important point to make, because actually, it can appear and feel and be, if you like, from the customer experience, genuinely tailored. But actually, the amount of changing you have to do is probably not huge. And I guess that's probably the art, right? It's not just a totally standard product. Otherwise, you're just selling them through a course. But it's not completely made up on the spot for the person. As you say, that becomes a nightmare. And by the way, again, when you say this, I guiltily think, oh my God, that's exactly what I've been guilty of doing so many times. And gradually, I've spotted that there are commonalities, like everyone's got the same damn problems, and gradually standardized things. But it's taken me a long time. So I can say, from the point of view of somebody who's not done that, how painful it is. So I can second the idea that you really need to stay away from that.
And like for coaching as well, one thing which I was working on, so I took someone through like a sales development program a few months ago. And what I did was I basically created a menu. I took him through from start to finish, completely everything. But actually what I ended up with was a menu. So then I can give the menu to somebody and say, okay, so what are you struggling with? Well, first we go through like the discovery process, figure out what I think they're struggling with, because it might not be what they think they're struggling with. And then I show them the menu and say, which bits do you want to dive into? And then you've already got a set piece for each one of those pieces, so it makes it much easier.
And by the way, I think that takes a lot of the burden off the client. The client doesn't really want to have to think about the process. They want the result. That's why they come to you with the pain. It's the immediate starting point. And if they're a person with vision, and they're not always, sometimes they just have a pain, which is not a good client, by the way, take it from me. I've worked with a lot of those guys. But if they have a vision of where they want to get to, they don't really want to know about the in-between bit. That's your job. And I guess so unconscious, they're waiting for you to say, actually, this is the path. But they want a little bit of a feeling of control. And that's where you give them a few options. It's like a menu, isn't it? You don't normally say, okay, waiter, come over here. So I want you to create something. Here's a recipe. So here's the list of ingredients. And I want you to cook it at 1 hour and a half at 375 degrees Fahrenheit or 200 degrees C. And that would be an enormous burden. You know, if you go into a restaurant, you don't want that. And yet, I reflect on myself and other people that I know, we do that to our clients. And actually, we're not doing them a favor that way. We better wrap this one up, but some fascinating insights. Really, thank you, John. Really, very interesting. As ever, you're a really bright guy with a huge amount of experience, and you've got an interesting way of looking at this stuff. So fascinating stuff. Thank you very much for sharing that. And may you stay safe in Vietnam, as we all hope to try to in the UK and the US for those listening. And very many thanks for coming on the show.
Cool. Thanks for having me, Michael.
Thanks so much for listening to the 10K Collective podcast, part of the family of amazing FBA podcasts. Today's episode is sponsored by the new e-commerce podcast, The E-Commerce Leader. The podcast is hosted by yours truly and Jason Miles, multi-million dollar Shopify owner and Udemy's highest rated e-commerce instructor. If you're the owner of a thriving online business and you want to become the best e-commerce leader you can be, it's got your name on it. For free guides and mini courses on many topics, go to www.theecommerceleader.com.